Today on Rambling About Cars, no Hemi, no problem. That's going to be the case for 2025. We've got information on the new Ram pickup truck and the electric Ram Charger. We've got a very cool story about Nissan GTRs, R34 GTRs, the ones that are almost non-forbidden fruit in the United States. And we're going to talk about some engines. We're going to do some cheap car challenges. We got a lot to do, so let's roll. It's podcast time, everybody. I'm Christopher Smith, and across the way, Mr. Chris Bruce. How you doing, man?
Doing well, doing well. I need to shave. I'm looking at myself in the camera here, and I need to get the razor out. I'm
just a little hairy. No shave November, right?
Is that a thing?
It was when I was watching hockey. I don't know if it's just a hockey thing. Well. But I can't do it. I go for a few days and it's just like, no, this just, I'm not ready to be Santa Claus. Cause this is all white through here now. I had white beard going on in my 20s. I work that hard.
That's kind of cool. I want to throw something out to the listeners here.
Yes.
We are talking about, you know, maybe changing things up format wise next year, you know, maybe just trying some different things. So for anyone lots out there listening, this is not a negative thing at all. It's just
lots of good stuff coming.
Yeah. We're just, you know, brainstorming what we could do, what we could do different, what we could do better, stuff like that. So for, you know, any listeners out there, let us know what you think. Is there something that we do that you would like more of? Is there something that we do that you would like less of? Is there something we don't do that you think we should do? Like, you know,
feedback time.
Throw it out there. Like, you're not going to hurt our feelings if like, oh, hey, I hate it when you talk about XYZ. Then, you know, maybe we'll talk about that less, or I really wish you did this more, or, you know, just whatever. Let us know.
Feedback time. We're nothing without the Ramblers. So let us know. Absolutely. The best way to let us know, podcast@motorone.com. Email us. That's
email address. Or you could always right here. You can do that too. And hell, we'll
read the comments. You can comment wherever we're at, which is Motor One YouTube, Motor One.com Facebook, Motor1.com Twitter. You can comment in all those areas. And of course, we still love our audio listeners on Spotify and Apple. FBC
says we need to be talking more about painted stripes.
That's not going away anytime soon, man.
No.
Not going away anytime soon.
Expensive on Ferraris, isn't it? I thought, so this is obviously decades ago, but like on the F360, it was like a $12,000 or $15,000 option to get the painted stripes.
You're talking Ferraris. I mean, it doesn't really apply. I mean, because it's Ferrari. Yeah. I mean, everything is expensive there. But if I remember correctly, painted stripes on the 2020 Shelby GT500 Mustang, I think that was like a $10,000 or $12,000 option if you wanted them painted instead of just the vinyl stripes. So and painted stripes, man.
Yeah. Real quick, so just because it's fun, and for anyone out there who's listening that wants to participate, we are going to be doing a cheap car challenge at the end of tonight's episode. Yep. The theme this time is car to drive during the winter, and you have $2,000 to spend. So budget and, car.
And make it interesting. I mean, anybody can go out and buy an old Neon, right? Or even in a lot of places, you can find an old beater truck or an old beater SUV. Make it interesting, something that might be interesting to drive. And that's going to be, I mean, that's subjective, right? That's going to be different for everybody out there. I remember when I had a Chevy Metro, aka Geo Metro, that I used for a winter car. I ultimately found that very interesting. And I'm weird like that, but it was an interesting thing to drive. So, $2,000, you're driving it through winter, make it interesting. And yeah, we're going to be doing this later on in the show. And if you have some, if you want to do some shopping here in the meantime, you can jump in, you can join us. You can jump into the comments. If you're a brand new Rambler and you're like, hey, what is this program that I just stumbled upon on YouTube or Facebook? You can comment right there, right now, because we're live. It comes into our command central here. We see your comments and you can join the ride right along with us. We can respond as you come in with a comment. So
our buddy NBC out of Australia, he said there was a local guy here with a white car with blue stripes, except it started as the blue car. He painted the rest of the car white. So that's a reverse stripe.
That's a pretty sneaky way. Instead of painting the stripes, you paint the car.
Right. And then just mask off what you don't want to be the other color.
I feel like there is a philosophical discussion there. Like the stripes are already there. You just need to paint around them. Every car has painted stripes, Bruce. You just need to paint around them.
It's like jazz. It's the notes you don't play.
And yeah, it's 5 minutes in. We're off the rails already. This is Key Rambling About Cars right here. So yeah, wherever you're at out there, type in your comments. Let us know what you'd like to see more of on the show. Email us podcast@motorwind.com. Let us know what you'd like to see. What works for you? What doesn't work for you? 2024 is going to be quite a year. I'm really looking forward to it. And we're already doing some stuff right now in the planning phase. So,
but let's kick this show off. We're going to start out, honestly, the biggest vehicle debut of the past week. I would call it that. That is the newly refreshed and significantly updated 2025 Ram 1500.
Yeah.
We just got that this week. I'm vamping here a second while I find the gallery. And
I mean, it's still fresh right now because, I mean, obviously it's just this week. I have a feeling it's going to be one of the... I have a feeling this is sort of like the mango habanero hot sauce of cars right now. In that, what the
hell does that mean?
It doesn't feel like it's really that big of a deal now, but as time goes on, it's going to be like, oh, okay, that's pretty spicy. It's going to sneak up on you because there's a lot going on here. I mean, obviously, yeah. I mean, it's big news right now. We're also now starting to look towards LA Auto Show, which is just a little over a week away at this point. And obviously, I mean, we had good traffic in at Motor One on this truck. It's a refresh of the current generation Ram. It's not a completely new generation.
But it's a significant refresh. You know, we made some tweaks here. We made some tweaks there. There are some major changes to this truck. Most notably, and as you kind of referenced at the beginning of the show, the 5.7 liter Hemi V8 is gone. That's been around for 20 years, I bet.
Thereabouts. I think if memory serves, and we know how well my memory goes, everybody, don't we? If memory serves, I think the modern iteration of the Hemi V8 launched in the, Dodge Ram at that point. First. And then it percolated its way into other vehicles after. So,
but it's been an engine that's been there a long time, decades, and is now gone. Instead of getting that naturally aspirated V8, now the high performance engine is a twin turbocharged 3 liter inline six. Stellantis, Dodge, whomever, they call it the Hurricane. It's also an engine that you can get in Jeeps and things like that. And it's going to be available in two levels of tune in the Ram. The standard version makes 420 horsepower, 469 pound-feet of torque, or there'll be a high-performance version with 540 horsepower, 521 pound-feet of torque, and then the naturally aspirated 3.6-liter V6 is still sticking around as the base engine. So and that's, you can no longer get a V8 in your Ram pickup.
No more V8. So yeah, no Hemi, no problem. I mean, we'll wait and see on that. We know Hemi and Dodge, and then when Ram spun off to be its own brand, Ram, Hemi has been tied with this vehicle for 20 years.
It's at least 20 years, you know.
So there's a lot of love for that engine. It'll be interesting to see how it goes forward. My take in the beginning, no Hemi, no problem, I say no Hemi, no problem, because I think this Hurricane, everything that I've seen and heard about the Hurricane engine is good. 540 horsepower in its top trim. That's an impressive output. One thing we don't have yet, we don't have fuel economy ratings for the engine yet. I really want to see those because The Hemi, it didn't do bad for what it was, but in my take, you know what, we can do better. It's time to move on.
Did that this, Ram this you inline had for six, a little while, was it a Hemi or do you have the V6?
That was actually prior. My Ram was old enough. It predated the return of the Hemi. I had a 99. Okay. I had a 99 Dodge Ram 1500 two-wheel drive SLT. It had the 5.9 liter Magnum V8 in it.
Okay. The other Magnum.
Sure. And I was lucky to get 12 miles to the gallon out of that. Easily. I was really disappointed with that. I mean, it had decent power. But yeah, that's why I say, hey, you know what? Bring on the inline six. An inline six doesn't bother the Cummins guys, the diesel guys. So right. The gas guys, hopefully they will make this transition. I think it's an awesome step. I think it's a good step. I think it's a step in the right direction. The engine, though, I mean, that's not the only thing that's new here. We have two new trims that I want to mention here really quick, because we have a new range topping trim for the Ram 1500. That's tungsten. And I want to point out, we don't have any pricing information yet, so we don't know how this is going to shake out as a range topper. But we do know, I mean, it's coming with 24-way power massaging, ventilated, heated seats. Leather is everywhere. Suede is everywhere. It's got a 23-speaker stereo system. I mean, it's a luxury truck. And then aside from that, not only is the Hemi dead, the TRX is dead, at least for right now. Whether TRX comes back in some future variant is unclear, but fear not, because there is the RHO. And I don't know, Bruce, did we catch what that stands for? I didn't see anything in the official announcement on what RHO stands for, but there's the Ram RHO.
Agreed. I think that would be a really good thing to reach out to Ram tomorrow and find out what RHO stands for, because there's nothing obvious about it, certainly. At least, you know, TRX, while it didn't really stand for anything, it always had that T-Rex thing inside the it had the T-Rex inside the center console when you open it up and stuff like that. RHO is just, it's just letters, so we'll have to find out.
Yeah, RHO, don't know yet what it means. We do know it'll have that 540 horsepower version of the twin turbo inline six. And it's supposed to basically have the same underpinnings, the suspension setup, all of that of the TRX. So in that respect, you might think of it as a TRX with light, a bit less a bit less power. The images that we have, it looks like the TRX. It's got the wider stance. It's got the three orange marker lights in the grill. One thing I want to point out, Ram hasn't released very much information on RHO. And we have contacted them a little bit to try to find out a little bit more. They said more information will come at a later date. We do know that truck isn't even going to be available until the third quarter of next year, well into 2024. So more to come on RHO. Honestly, though, It might open more doors for people in the Ram community that really dig that TRX, but just can't afford it, right? Because I mean, it's a pretty expensive truck just to start with, and then once you add in some options and packages, it goes over six figures pretty easily. Meanwhile, over in Camp Ford, you still have a Raptor with 450 horsepower that gives you the stance, the feel of the Raptor without the big muscle of the Raptor R. So
right,
this could be a good thing, and it leaves a door open for, would it be, I don't know, an RHOR? Total speculation there. But I mean, it does leave a little bit more room if they wanted to go with some big bonkers muscle truck once again.
And the other thing that we haven't talked about yet, and you were talking about opening doors to new buyers, and that is Ram has revived. Well, it was obviously the Dodge Ram Charger at the time, but it is now the Ram Charger. And that name is back in a completely different form.
Completely.
Back in the old days, that was an SUV. It was essentially Dodge's effort to compete against vehicles like the Ford Bronco and the Chevy K5 Blazer. Now, Ram Charger, and it's a really kind of fun play on words, if you think about it, is a electric pickup. It is not a purely electric pickup, like we were talking about that Mazda's iconic SP concept last week, where it had a rotary acting as a range extender just to charge the batteries. This vehicle has a 3.6 liter V6 that does not run the wheels at all. It functions totally as a range extender to charge the batteries. And I really real quick, before we start talking about this vehicle, there's something I found hilarious. And I don't know, Smith, if you saw this, our pals over at IEVs wrote up a story saying that Ram claims it has unlimited range because obviously you can fill up the tank and then, you know, keep going. You never have to plug this in because it's got the gasoline engine there. But that's the same thing as saying any car has unlimited range because you can put gas in it.
Yeah.
Like, as long as gas is in the tank, you have range.
Like, that's sort of not the point, though. I mean, it's marketing spin in a wonderful way. And okay, so honestly, I'm still not sure where I fall on Ram Charger. I haven't had much time to look around on the socials to see, okay, what are the Ram Charger people, like the OG Ram Charger, how are they feeling about the Ram Charger name being back, not on a smaller two-door, Bronco-type competitor, older Bronco competitor, I should say, but a big old full-size quad cab pickup truck. There are a lot of people that are really passionate about that Ram Charger name. So I'm curious to see what's going to happen there, how that's going to shake down. And now we have the whole, okay, it's an electric truck, but it's an electric truck with a V6 and a 27 gallon fuel tank. Mm-hmm. So is it the best of both worlds? Is it the worst of both worlds? Honestly, I'm still trying to figure this out. There is a bit of brilliance here, though, because, yes, you can use this like a regular familiar truck that you know right now. You stop, you fill up the gas tank, it starts the engine charges the battery, away you go. I don't know yet. I mean, okay, so if you get down to where you are like an eighth of a tank, you need to stop, you need to fill up. I don't know how quickly that charges the battery. I don't know if there might be a little bit of time where you have to just sit and let it run to charge it. That's something we still don't know about. There's still a lot. It's sort of like the RHO. There's a lot of information that still needs to come out on Ram Charger.
That's been an issue with other range extended vehicles, but I could be it. You know, the implementations vary,
right,
from vehicle to vehicle, so it's hard to say. I would hope they wouldn't do that, but yeah, that's something we would need to find out. And like you said, it has a 27 gallon fuel tank. It also has a 95 kilowatt hour battery pack, which is pretty good size.
It's not a small battery, and it makes me wonder, right, okay, how much does this weigh? Right. I can't recall if we had official information on electric only range.
Only range I have not seen, but okay. Total range, Ram is saying 690 miles.
690 miles. Now that's using your battery plus the 27 gallon fuel tank. Now, everybody, all the regular ramblers out there know I am terrible at math. That's why I write for a living instead of Christopher Smith accountant. Nah, that's not going to fly. 690 miles.
Correct.
27 gallon fuel tank. What's your miles per gallon there? Isn't that somewhere around like 25, 26 miles to the gallon?
Dude, you're making me do math.
That's
I'm a writer.
I mean, I did the numbers, and unless I'm miscalculated, I think it's somewhere around there. And
I'm seeing 25.5.
And isn't that kind of Not much different than, say, a diesel. I mean, if you're going to look at it from that perspective, right? Why even bother with the electric motors and the battery? At least from a range perspective, right? Because I mean, if you're going long distance, okay, but now
we should say this has a lot more power than what a diesel would have. So yes. It has a 335 horsepower electric motor at the front and a 319 horsepower motor at the back. They have not said what total output, or I'm sorry, they actually have said what total output is. I'm a moron. 663 horsepower, 615 pound-feet of torque.
0 to 60 in 4.4 seconds, tows 14,000 pounds.
That's a lot of power and a lot of towing and a lot of stuff.
It's super capable, and this is why I still don't know how I feel about this, because I want to say, okay, it's the worst of both worlds. It's like, why am I buying an electric truck if I'm still going to carry around a V6 engine with an exhaust system, with a cooling system, with all of this stuff that I don't want to deal with anyways, along with a generator on board, plus two electric motors, plus the battery? What is this going to weigh a gazillion pounds? Is that really the best of both worlds? But then you think, okay, this is an electric truck. That engine isn't driving the wheels. The electric motors are. So if you aren't driving longer distances, it's in a lot of ways like a plug-in hybrid where you can just run around and not even start that gas engine. And if you're commuting 30, 40 miles a day to work or something, the only time you might have to use your engine is if you're taking longer trips or if you're towing something that's going to zap your battery. So maybe Ram is onto something here. I still don't know how I feel. I need some more time to think about the pluses and the minuses.
So two things. First off, I was wrong. We actually do have electric only range. That is 145 miles electric only. That's before, you know, the engine kicks on. Secondly, you have to remember the Ram Rev is coming next year as well. And that is fully that electric. Is
totally bad.
There's no engine. It is fully electric. So Ram is doing a really interesting thing where you're going to be able to get, you know, purely combustion power. You're going to be able to get the Ram charger where you have a combustion engine as a range extender. And then you're going to be able to get a fully electric pickup as well, depending on, you know, what your needs are, what your budget is, what you prefer. Like, they're kind of covering the whole spectrum of what, you know, a customer could conceivably want there.
Right. And again, I come back to, okay, it seems like the biggest complaint or worry that I hear from truck people right now regarding electric trucks is I can't tow anything anywhere because it zaps my range. And even in the best of conditions, it'll still take me, you know, maybe a half hour or so to get some meaningful range back. This would, in theory,
solve that.
Because you would be just pumping fuel back into the tank. But if you're buying an electric vehicle, in theory, you're doing that because you don't want any more internal combustion. You don't
want to do that.
Right? So it's one of those. It's a quandary, man. It's a quandary. And Ramblers, I mean, give us feedback on this big time. podcast@motorone.com email if you're not catching us live. If you are catching us live right now, jump into the comments. I see Group FBC is in here, and I know there's other people listening out there. Yep. Group FBC, you're saying we're talking about the theoretical miles per gallon. That's a good point. That's based on starting with a 100% battery charge. And it's also worth noting that 690 miles, that's an estimate right now. Maybe more, it may be less, but I mean,
I love Adam Green. I was told there would be no math. Yeah, buddy.
Yeah.
So was sorry. I.
Sorry. Hey, we're figuring it out. We've got calculators. I've got an old manual flight computer around here somewhere where once upon a time I was trying to be a pilot. Maybe, I don't know, maybe with my affinity for numbers, it's good that I didn't go all the way through and get my pilot's license.
I'm going to share this with Group of FBC because he asked about it. And so vamp for me for just a hot second here while I pull stuff up.
Wait, and only the comment. Yeah. It only gets 145 miles from the 92 kilowatt hour battery, my God. And I thought the same thing. That is not a good range.
Right there. All that energy can propel the EV to 60 miles per hour in 4.4 seconds, with the battery providing about 145 miles of electric only range.
It's a big battery, and that's not much range, but you have the gasoline engine. You have the gasoline engine to charge up the battery. So again, we're coming back to this question of, I'm buying an electric truck because I don't want to go to the gas station all the time. I don't want that. I don't want internal combustion. I want electric power. But now here I have this truck where, as long as I don't go, you know, more than 140 miles a day, which in reality, a lot of people just in their daily drive, you're not driving that far. The only time you're doing things like that, you know, if you're taking short trips somewhere, and really, I mean, 145 miles isn't that far.
I mean, it's more than you would drive in a day, certainly, if you're commuting to work and back.
Oh, well, I mean, I'm just thinking, okay, where I'm at in northern Michigan, it's nothing for me to take a 45 or 50 mile drive just to go to an area where there are some better stores to do some shopping. So right there, I get there in about an hour. So, you know, 2 hours of driving, I've killed almost, you know, a good portion of my range. If I were to go, say, down to Mount Pleasant, that's about 80 miles one way, be there in a little over an hour. That kills my entire battery right there.
Right.
So, I mean, it's definitely on the low side, but you're getting the engine. Yeah.
690 miles of range. So, I mean,
and that wipes away all the concern. And I mean, if I can go round and round and round in circles. I still have to decide how I feel about this, and that's not going to be answered tonight.
I don't think we have to decide how we feel about it. I think it's worth presenting the information and then seeing what these vehicles are actually like. Because again, this is a 2025 model year vehicle, and so we kind, you know, by that time, theoretically, the Cybertruck's going to be out there. The F-150 Lightning will certainly already be out there.
Yeah,
you know. The Chevy and the Sierra EVs should be out. Like, they're going to be competitors in this field. Hell, the Ram Rev, which is, it's interesting because it's kind of competing against this, is going to be out there. So I think it's fine not to have a definitive like opinion on this vehicle right now, a few days after it debuted. Let's wait and see how it stacks up to the competition at that time.
I will say this much. I think Ram might be onto something just from the discussion that's being spurred here. It's certainly raising some eyebrows. That much is certain. If you think about it this way, this truck works, has an electric daily driver for just about every conceivable work commute. I don't know many people that are commuting 50 miles one way. I did for a little while earlier in my career. It sucked, and I just moved closer to where I work. Not saying that people don't do it.
No, people do it, but it's the exception rather than the rule.
So you're driving your full-size truck, has a daily driver, has a commuter with just electric power that you can plug in and charge up at home just like your regular EV. And then when you want to tow the camper up north for a weekend camping trip, that's 300 miles away, you can
or
do it
snowmobiles or the boat
and not have to worry. And not have to worry about trying to find a charger. You still have your gasoline engine that you can rely on. The downside is you have the best and the worst of both worlds then, I guess, at this point, because now you have all of the EV components to maintain, which in theory should be much less. And then you have all of the combustion components that you still need to maintain.
Oil changes. You're still going to have to, you know, buy gas.
I got to see the weight on this thing.
Yeah.
Man, 145 miles of range with a 96 kilowatt hour battery. More to come.
Yeah, totally.
More to come on that. That's pretty big news. We didn't even mention that we should mention this before we move on, Bruce. Obviously, there's a little more ramp stuff. There's obviously the facelift. The grill is a little bit bigger outside.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's a handsome look. Inside, you get an optional passenger screen now.
You do.
On some trims, you have now your, I have it written down here, 12.3-inch driver digital display. You can get up to a 14.5-inch center display. And now you can get an optional 10.25-inch passenger screen. So your passenger can watch stuff as well.
I wonder whether that's technology I just wonder about. Because, so for example, my wife and I, we go on a lot of road trips. But she'll just look at her phone if I'm driving, or I'll look at my phone if she's driving or stuff like that, because it's got all my apps and stuff on there. I just wonder, is that tech that actually gets used? And I don't know. Like, I've never had a vehicle with that. Maybe it's incredibly useful. I wonder.
Well, I have a feeling that if the passenger can control much of the infotainment functions from that screen, it would be useful, because there are many times where I'll be driving. I'll ask my wife, hey, can you plug in the address for here, just so we can have it up in Google Maps. We can get traffic alerts, things like that. So she's working the center screen. I mean, it's in the Forester, right? So, I mean, it's pretty close together, but on a vehicle that might be a little bit further away, or especially on some of them where the infotainment is canted a little bit towards the driver, yeah. I can see it being far more convenient to just boop, 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 boop on the passenger screen. And I mean, for some situations where if the passenger just wants to watch movies or some other form of entertainment that wouldn't be accessible on the main screen.
Yeah, that I feel like you do on your phone, but I agree with your stuff about if you could plug in, navigation, or, pull up. My wife calls it playing the DJ of figuring out what we're going to listen to next. So
that's passenger seat requirements right there. I mean, you are the DJ. Shotgun, you are the DJ.
Few things I want to bring up before we change topics here. Ted Adam Green says, I wonder how you know when it's time to change the oil. And Grupa FBC, because he's the clever man that he is. Ted Adam Green, when it stops leaking and there's no longer a fresh oil stain when you park. So bravo to that. And then also wanted to call out Blizzard 0711 said,
yes,
next week the LA Auto Show, what can we expect? And I'm going to throw this up here real quick.
I was going to say, Bruce,
you wrote up.
We just published this about an hour and a half before. If we want to do an audible, we weren't going to talk about it here, but yes,
we can go Blizzard, real quick.
Blizzard, thanks for joining us, and thanks for jumping right in with the comments. We can give you a little bit of information on that. I have a suspicion that there's still might be more to come. Usually we get at least one surprise or so from an automaker as we're leading up to an auto show, because right now, LA, it feels like it's going to be a fairly sizable show. We have four debuts right now that we know are coming.
And I think you're right. There's going to be more, but.
And I'm talking about major automakers here. I mean, it's always possible smaller startups might come in and unveil things that we may or may not have information on ahead of time. So from a standpoint of major manufacturers, we know Subaru is going to be there with a quote unquote fully redesigned vehicle.
Yeah.
That we believe is a next generation Forester. The current generation Forester launched in 2018, I believe it was. It had a refresh in 2021, 2022, somewhere around there. So the time frame kind of fits for a new vehicle. It's the oldest vehicle in their lineup. So we think Subaru is going to be there with a new Forester. We also know that Lucid will be there with its second production vehicle, the Lucid Gravity. It was, I think, 3 years and almost 2 months ago when this was first announced by Lucid that, hey, we're going to do an SUV. We've seen prototypes in production. We've seen prototypes in testing in public. They've issued some teasers. We've sort of seen the whole thing from the outside, but never one shot where it's really clear. They've always been some distance away, or maybe the angle isn't just quite right. So Lucid will finally be presenting the Gravity official with views from all sides. Presumably they will have full information on the production model. We know Toyota will be there with the Crown SUV, and Toyota's been teasing this the last couple weeks or so. It's one of those situations where this vehicle, we're fairly certain, it's the Toyota Crown Estate that's available in Japan. Right. When you look at the back, I mean, everything lines up perfectly with the back. The only difference that I've noticed, Bruce, the teasers here have a windshield wiper on the back window. And when you look at the Japan model, there's no windshield wiper back there.
That's pretty minor.
But it's going to be pretty minor. We're almost positive this will be the Toyota Crown Estate that's already debuted for the Japanese market. Whether it's called Crown Estate, we don't exactly know yet. We've heard there might be a different name, but we know that's definitely coming. That's already been confirmed by Toyota. And then just today, we found out about today.
Yeah,
we've got the Ford Mustang GT California Special. This isn't necessarily going to be a new model. Obviously, the 2024 Mustang debuted last year, seventh generation car, but this teaser image just dropped today. And to be completely forthright and transparent, Ford has not said, hey, we're debuting a California Special at the LA Auto Show. Ford CEO Jim Farley, just in a tweet, said, really excited for what's next for the Mustang, and then gave us this shadowed photo. That's the front of a Ford Mustang, a 2024 Mustang. The letters GT/CS are very, very clear to see. That is 100,000% the badge for the California Special. Yeah. So there's really no mystery there. What's interesting here, however, it's a very shadowed teaser. And a longtime journalist trick when automakers send out these darkened teasers, you throw them in Photoshop and we lighten them up, because sometimes whoever's doing the photo processing, they take like a regular full production type photo and just turn the brightness down and send it out. We turn the brightness back up. Oops, they actually revealed their vehicle and they didn't mean to. So we always do that with these. Ford is at least on to that because we turned it up. Okay, it doesn't really show anything extra. But when you look on the lower left side, there's a date and there are coordinates. And the date is November 11th, 2023. Coordinates take you to some mall south of Los Angeles. So 11-11-23, is that going to be when it debuts? That would be a little bit before LA, but I can't believe they would take the covers off of a California Special south of Los Angeles a week before the LA Auto Show, with the freaking name being California, and then not have it at the show. So,
yeah.
So that's what we have going on there right now with the larger debuts that we know are going to be happening in LA. And stay tuned at MotorOne.com, because I'm fairly certain, like I said, we usually get some surprises somewhere, whether it's an embargo the night before, or sometimes the day of, when an automaker just really wants to keep something secret. So stay tuned. And Blizzard, thanks for joining us and thanks for the comment.
Yep. Well, let's move on to a story you actually wrote, Smith, and it exploded on MotorOne.com.
I see what you did there.
Well, yeah.
Like this engine. Look at that.
Yes. It is a Ford 2.7 liter EcoBoost V6. That someone took in, I don't know, do we know what company took it in? It kind of doesn't matter. They took it in as a core because, you know, they're swapping out the engine. So they did a video teardown of it. And it's fascinating because it looks fine at the beginning. And then it continues to look fine.
Oh, yeah. He takes it apart.
My God, what happened here?
But I mean, you know from the beginning that there's something wrong. And I equated it to, like, you know, one of the crime murder mysteries. We know something happened here. Now we need to investigate. This was an engine from a 2015 to 2017 Ford F-150. It's the 2.7 liter EcoBoost. It was a core return. And then the gentleman on this YouTube channel, Bruce, do you have the article pulled up? I want to make sure we reference the YouTube channel here. I Do Cars is the YouTube channel. He has a lot of engine teardowns. And I think you're going to be seeing more of these because he does a really good job. It's just, he's very good on camera. We get great views. And if you're kind of a mechanical car nerd like I am, it's neat to see these engine teardowns to investigate, to try to find out what happened. It's also eye-opening to see some of the complexities in these engines. This is a case of he bought this core from the company. It's the 2.7 liter EcoBoost. I think it's the first generation of the 2.7 liter EcoBoost engine. Didn't know what was wrong with it. So it's like, okay, we got the engine. We're going to tear it down. We're going to see what's going on. And yeah, it starts off, everything looks good, right?
Everything's fine. Like, you're like, okay.
Even looking at the spark plugs, it's like, well, the spark plugs on one bank, he said, felt like they'd been removed once already and then reinstalled because the tightness felt a little different. But they were still original factory plugs installed from the factory because they still had the paint dots on them. And he also noticed then that some of the wiring harnesses on that particular side of the engine were unplugged. So that's sort of the start of the clues. Okay. It looked like attention was given to this side of the engine. So, okay, we're tearing things down. And I love how he's just struggling with the wiring harness with it out of the truck. I can't imagine doing that work in the truck. Just a mass of wires. Gets the wiring harness off, pulls the intake plenum up top, taking a look inside. Nope, things still look pretty good in there. Eventually, we get over to the cam covers or the valve covers, depending on.
I'm
going to
skip forward a bit just because.
On your terminology.
That's when things start going bad.
Well, the covers come off. Okay, things look pretty good in there. The cam lobes, everything looks good. Nothing, there doesn't seem to be anything broken. Looking at the cam phasers, the timing chains are fine. The cam phasers, I think he was starting to see some little sparkly bits in the cam phasers. And then taking off the turbos, one of the turbos looked like there's quite a bit of oil going through it, but the turbo wasn't bad. He also noticed on one of those, just little filters for the turbo, little more sparkly bits. Okay. That's indicating that at some point some metal was going through this oiling system. So something happened somewhere. Oh, and I want to mention right off the bat, before doing anything, he puts a wrench on the crank and he's turning it over. He's like, okay, yeah, it still feels like it has compression. He even says right in the beginning, he's like, man, I hope I don't completely tear down a totally good engine.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a totally good engine. We finally get down, we get the heads off. The one bank, everything looks good there. The pistons look good.
One bank is fine.
The head looks good. The other one comes off. And
that's when the trouble starts.
What happened to the top part of that piston? Oh, the top part of that aluminum piston is actually now part of the block. The long story short is
there. You can see it.
Yep. We can see it right there. There's a big chunk of the piston missing from the top and he zooms in. He's like, where did that piece of metal go? And then he goes, oh, it's like there in the block where it got so hot that it actually just melted. It's melted that little bit of piston right into the cylinder wall.
As I was writing up the post for the podcast, how hot does that have to be to melt aluminum? Like, I don't even know what you do to do that. Like,
I mean, you have the heat, you have the pressure problem in there. And of course, it also then on the bottom side of that head where the combustion chamber is, that messed up the combustion chamber, those valves. He eventually takes the rest of the engine apart, gets the bottom end all out of it, pulls the piston out. I mean, the piston is just totally deformed on one side. It's one of those things where you look at it, and I bet the engine was still running. I bet it made a hellacious noise. And obviously, it was down a cylinder. But it's one of those cases where the investigation, the journey is kind of exciting because you're going step by step and nope, it's not here. Nope, it's not here. D- Did he probably have a good idea of what was wrong from the get-go? Possibly. I mean, my first thought on this
engine was traded as a core. Clearly, it, you know, there was probably some issue somewhere. Otherwise, it would still be in whatever vehicle that it was in. But
right, and
you
and
don't I expect the piston to be essentially welded to the cylinder. That's not what you expect to find.
It's one of those little things where okay. Obviously, there's probably going to be something wrong on the bottom end. What, did it spin a bearing and now we're going to find like a busted rod or a bunch of big metal chunks in the pan? It's like, nope. There wasn't really even much of that. That little chunk of piston just melted into the cylinder wall and it melted the piston in the process. Whether the block is usable again, we don't know. I mean, certainly some parts are going to be usable from that engine. But it's the process. It's the tearing it down. It's looking inside, and it's getting to know the engine. I mean, for example, the oil pump is chain driven on these, and I learned that the second generation it's belt driven. Now it's supposed to be a super reinforced belt, but man, I would rather have that. I would rather have that be chain driven than belt driven.
Sure.
You know, especially when you're talking. I mean, I'm sure that's probably an engine out procedure if you have a belt break.
It's got to be. It has to be.
So, I mean, just things like that that you learn in the process. And he does a really good job. I feel like I could go tear down a 2.7 right now. And that would be hilarious. And if I were to videotape that, it might get some clicks on YouTube just because I would be like, yeah, I got this. And then like 45 minutes later, I'd be drunk because I would have just given up and gone to the bottle. just given up and gone to the bottle just because I couldn't find the 10 millimeter, right? Hey, where's the 10 millimeter socket? Damn it. It's always missing. But no, this was an enjoyable watch with kind of a surprise there at the end, seeing how that little chunk of piston is just kind of part of the cylinder wall now.
Oh, yeah.
And Motor One readers, we thank you for enjoying the video along with us because this might end up being one of the biggest traffic articles we've had all year.
Yep.
And
it'll be on the list, certainly.
And I'm looking forward to doing more of these. Again, let me just give a shout out to the channel here. We can see
the piston and just how messed up that thing is.
Like that cylinder got hot. I'm
not going to use a swear word, but that's not what it's supposed to look like.
It's toast. It's one of those, oh, well, there's your problem moments, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
You don't have to be an expert to know, okay, that's not supposed to have a hole in the side like that. What caused it to get hot? That's still a mystery. That's something that we don't know. And at the end of this video, he actually does a very good job of, you know, listing all kinds of various reasons. Yeah. It's messed up, man.
You could put your pinky finger into that, or I could put my pinky finger into that. Certainly.
It's messed up. I also want to point out there, I mean, he mentions all kinds of various reasons that you could get a cylinder hot enough like this to basically burn a piston. He also points out that this isn't necessarily just a Ford EcoBoost issue. He's seen burnt pistons like this on many engines. His take was in tearing down the EcoBoost. He says this is one of the first EcoBoost engines he's had the chance to tear down. And he was pretty impressed overall with what he saw, just with the strength, the build quality. He felt that it was a pretty overbuilt engine. This one, obviously not. It has a smoky piston. Also worth pointing out, we have no idea the mileage on the engine. Nope. He thinks it was probably under
what the owner, you know, what kind of the service history was.
We don't know the service history. Although in taking the engine apart, I mean, when you look into the valve train, you don't see a lot of varnish. That tends to point in the direction of, okay, the oil changes at least were done regularly on time and with a good quality oil. And he did note that in there. Also don't know if this engine was running with any sort of modifications, whether it had, you know, like a, you know, like a, like a high performance filter with maybe a performance tune. Don't know any of that. We just know that one cylinder got really hot and one piston did not like that.
Yeah. I want to call out Philip. I believe you're a first time commenter. We Patrick. Always like calling out our first time. I said, Philip, I'm sorry.
Patrick. I don't Patrick know why. Stark. I said Welcome, Philip. Patrick. Welcome Patrick to Philip Rambling Stark. About Cars.
Welcome to the show. Thanks so much. We love having you. I don't know why I called you Philip. Patrick, what am I thinking?
You're thinking of the Phillips screwdriver it's going to take to try to pry some of that crap out of that cylinder. That's what you're thinking.
That's right. Yep.
I got your back, Bruce.
I don't know. I saw a P name, and for some reason, I don't know why I went to Philip. I don't know. It just happened.
But yeah, I just want to give one more shout out. That channel is I Do Cars on YouTube.
It is.
We do have the channel linked at motorone.com. And I'm going to keep a closer eye. I've seen him do some teardowns before. I don't know that we've ever covered one on Motor One, but I know there have been some engines that have been pretty interesting. And I always thought, okay, this is probably going to be a little, maybe a little too deep for reader. Who wants to see somebody tear an engine down? Guess what?
Apparently
a lot of you people want to see an engine torn down, especially when it involves melting a piston into a cylinder. So look for more content like that at motorone.com. And we're going to talk more about that stuff here on Rambling About Cars when it comes up too, because
we are.
I love that sort of thing. I've got an engine sitting out in the garage that I'm half afraid to try to get started. I don't know. Maybe I'll end up welding a piston into the cylinder on that one as well.
I hope you don't. We want to highlight a really amazing story that we were lucky enough to be able to publish on motorone.com. This comes from Ryan Zumalin, and he has a book coming out. It is called Cult of GTR, A True Story of Crime, Obsession, and the World's Most Coveted Car. We were lucky enough to be able to publish a portion of this, and it's a really, really cool portion. It turns out that there is essentially an aircraft hangar. It's not literally an aircraft hangar, but it's an aircraft hangar-sized space about 20 miles outside of Tokyo that is full of Nissan Skyline GTRs,
specifically not just any GTRs. Yes,
yeah, specifically R34 GTRs. And the reason you might be wondering why they're there is that in the United States we have what's colloquially called the 25-year rule. That is that the Department of Transportation, once a foreign car reaches 25 years, you can bring it into the country legally and not have to worry about federalizing it, with proper, DOT stuff. I will add real quick that it is not 25 years from the car's introduction. It is 25 years from the car's date that it left the factory. So say car left September 22nd, 1999. You could not import that legally into the United States until September 22nd, 2024. And the reason I say that is that the R34 GTR was introduced in 1999. So this person has collected roughly 60 of these cars and has them in this hangar and is just waiting essentially until roughly a year from now, depending on the production, there's probably some 2000 or 2001s in there too, but the earliest ones would be from 1999, and then plans to start exporting them to the United States for buyers to purchase.
Yeah, it's a great story. Vampire Bear 13 is good to see you. Makes the comment that hangar belongs to Top Rank Imports USA. That's actually mentioned, I believe, in the write up. Is it not, Bruce?
I'm
pretty sure that's mentioned in there. It's stories like this I love reading, and I know it's going to be different for our listeners outside the United States, because I know at least some of you have driven these cars for years. I was like, oh, okay, well, what's the big deal? Well, they're cool cars, and we haven't had a chance to get them. So there is a lot of excitement. I've been fortunate. I haven't been in an R34. I've been in an R32. And the first thing that I didn't expect when it came upon one is how small they are. I thought these were bigger vehicles, and they're surprisingly small. I was a little shocked at how small they were. And just cool cars, right? Cool cars.
Totally.
I love that some of these have been sitting in there for years. Like people bought them years ago. And they're waiting, and occasionally like, they might go over to see their car.
Yeah. You know? Apparently one had been in the building for 7 years.
Yeah.
At least. Like it's they're just, you know, someone is just like, one of these days, I just gotta wait a little bit longer, and then I can put it on a boat and bring it to the United States. And that's really cool. Like, you know.
Yeah, we were fortunate to get that story. Another good traffic, another good piece of traffic that that we saw at Motor One with this.
Even
so
if it had done bad traffic, it's still a really,
it's
really
certainly
cool story.
Certainly worth talking about.
You know, just this hangar of Nissans just waiting to come to the United States, and
and it's heartening.
A few of them will start coming over,
and it's heartening to me to see other people interested in this sort of thing, which is why we want to try to bring it here onto the podcast as well. I mean, I still get angry about a really, really heartfelt story that I wrote several years ago about Stage Rally in the United States. I'm a big Stage Rally fan. There aren't that many of us in the United States, but those of us that are here are just extraordinarily passionate about it. A lot of research, had a lot of information, just wrote my heart out on that article. And it's like, nobody gave a crap about it. And then like a week later, I wrote an article, something like, here's why gas prices should be more expensive. And it, I mean, everybody was on that article. And it's just like, attention spans, right?
You know, the thing is, it's as long as you love it, I think that's, as long as you're proud of what you're writing, then it's okay. If, you know, I've had stories that I've been super proud of that no one ends up reading, but I'm still proud of them. So it, you know, it's,
oh yeah. Well, I'm still proud of that one.
Yeah.
But I'm super excited, super happy to see so much interest in this one. And I mean, I need to read the book. I need to get the book.
Oh yeah. I would love to read the book. I think we should definitely do that. And maybe, you know, even have the author on the show to talk more about it, because, you know, if this one chapter is any indication, then the book seems pretty fantastic.
I am absolutely down to do that. Bruce, if you can vamp for just a minute here, I want to get a link into our chat here.
Oh, I can vamp all day. It fascinates me that, you know, the passion that people have for cars and the way that, you know, people will tuck away cars in this, you know, glorified airplane hangar for years and just wait for them to, you know, be able to bring into the country legally. It just really shows the passion that people have. And I love it.
Vamp a little longer because our link in the article doesn't work. I'm going to have to fix that after the podcast.
Oh, okay. Not the podcast post I wrote, right?
No. In our article, there's a link to where people can buy the book called the GTR.
That's broken. Okay. Yeah. We'll definitely have to fix that.
And that link isn't working. So
that's
what I'm going to, I'll come. That. Yeah. I'll come back, on the YouTube post. I'll make sure we get a link in there, and I'll make sure we get a link here into the podcast post as well. Cause I'm not able to get it nabbed up here right away.
Yeah. But no, I think Ryan's book, again, just based on the single chapter I've read, it seems like it's a really good read. It seems like it's a really fun read, and I want to read more of it because I want to know more Nissan GTR stuff. And
I spoke too soon. Link is in the chat right now, folks. CarreraBooks.com, Cult of GTR. Awesome read.
Very good.
Awesome read. Hey. Are you ready for a cheap car challenge?
I know I am.
How about you, Ramblers? You guys ready for a cheap car challenge? I can't hear you. Of course I can't hear you. I'm 300 miles away from civilization in northern Michigan.
But again,
but yes,
$2,000, a car you can drive during the winter. If any of you, you know, while you were listening to the show or whatever, decided to go out and find one, throw it in the chat and I will, you know, put it, I will highlight it.
We'll highlight it, talk about it, join us on this.
You find it sound like you had more than two, maybe.
So I've got one, two, three, four, five.
Wow.
To choose from.
Okay.
But three of them are kind of the same thing. Okay. Again, the reference here, $2,000, something interesting. But I mean, not really any other criteria beyond that. We weren't looking at Japanese or European or trucks or cars. So I'm sure everybody knows that I have some strange tastes. You want me to go first?
Yeah, it sounds like you're ready to go. Yeah, go for it.
Well, let me get this yanked up here. I got to go with the Pontiac Aztec, man. I found a 2002 okay. Pontiac Aztec sport utility, 171,000 miles. It says it runs good, never had a problem with it, looking for a car, SUV, small truck, or something on trade. I mean, the photos, it doesn't look bad. It's in Owosso, Michigan, which is about an hour and a half from me. I will say it looks like there's something missing from that front fender, but it's...
Yeah, there's supposed to be like a piece of black trim there, I think.
It's it looks like maybe more that it's just kind of rusted through there on that front fender.
It's Michigan. You're going to have that.
Yeah, I'm trying to see if I can get a closer look.
But do I see that price right? It's $1,500.
$1,500, man. And I mean, can you really do any better on a winter car? I don't know if this one is all wheel drive or not. I think some of them were front wheel drive. But even if it's front wheel, I mean, hey, it's all right. I mean,
front wheel drive, yeah.
It's an Aztec. It's ugly, but I think over time it has embraced its ugliness. I don't know if it has the optional tent. That would make it even better for me. But I mean, these things just had all kinds of interesting little quirks and things going on inside. I don't mean to sound like a certain reviewer with a Cars and Bids website there, but it's
remove the center console and use it as like a cooler. That was a thing, right?
I can't remember if that was in there or not. There was something that you could remove.
Yeah, there's something you could use. Like I thought it was the center console or like the center, you know, bit, but maybe I'm wrong. But yeah, there was something you could use as a cooler and take out with you.
I mean, that the driver's seat looks pretty worn. I mean, but it's a winter car, right? It's a winter car.
It's not supposed to be pristine. It's a winter.
It's early 2000s Pontiac, so it's just got plastic trim everywhere. It's got the 3400 V6, which is not my favorite engine. One of our Ramblers made a comment earlier, Patrick, I think it was, talking about missing the old GM 3.8 liter. I've seen some wild stuff when I worked at Valvoline for sure. I miss supercharged engines like the old GM 3.8. That engine is just a legend. If you kill it, it's because you were trying way, way too hard to kill it. Whereas also, the 3400.
My first car was a 99 Outback with 181,000 miles, and it had 260,000 miles when I got a newer car.
All right, okay. Patrick, I got to ask, how many head gaskets in that time? I own a Subaru with the promise that the head gaskets were recently done before I bought it. And there's no paperwork to back it up, but a close examination, it looked to me like those were Felpro, you know, different gaskets none. In there. None. Oh man. Yeah. Okay. You're one of the fortunate ones.
Yeah.
One of the fortunate ones. So yeah, Pontiac Aztec, $1,500, runs good. Never had a problem with it. Means it's probably going to fall apart when you take it off the driveway. But I mean, it doesn't look that bad considering some of the winter cars I've had, Bruce.
Yeah, that's fine.
This doesn't look bad, and it's got space inside. It's got neat features. It has personality, I guess you could say, right? So that's when I found that one, I was like, okay, that's a keeper. And then I thought, well, okay, Owosso was like an hour and 45. No, not even that far. It's like maybe an hour, hour and a half away from me. Do I really want to go actually get it? No.
I've got a caveat mine just for a moment. Well, I got two caveats. First off, I understand people say that rear wheel drive is terrible in the winter.
All BS.
Exactly. And the vehicle I picked has an especially long wheelbase, which is going to make it even better. And also the other thing is it appears to literally be being sold by a little old lady. and the car is gorgeous. And I hope someone calls this nice old woman up and buys this car from them, from her, because it's something. I found a 2000 Ford Crown Victoria for $1,200. It is being sold by Frida, who looks like just the nicest lady in the world. And
there's a body in the trunk.
It's
1000% guaranteed. There's a body in the trunk.
Look at the seats. It's perfect.
Look at $1,200. Look at the profile. Bruce, I've always said at this price point, you have to shop the seller as much as the car. Look at her. There's a body in the trunk, guaranteed. This is way too wholesome.
Yeah, I know it's $1,200, but you know, the paint's nuked, but who cares? The leather's great. And these things, they have long wheelbases. You'll be able to find parts forever, but because between fleet agencies and the police, like I'm not, you're going to find parts every single day, all day long. I can't figure out why someone wouldn't buy this car. It was only listed a day ago. And tomorrow it gets sold.
It could be sold. I mean, if it's legit in good shape, without any significant issues. Yeah.
I will say
the P71, there's a big following for the P71 VIX, whether they're, you know, ex police cars or just the regular Crown VIX. Big body on frame,
messed up, but
comfy.
Who cares?
And yes, you put a good set of tires on there, and I'm a big advocate for good tires and specifically snow tires. And honestly, I mean, it's a big car. There's already going to be a good amount of weight over that back axle. I would put a little bit more weight back there just for good measure.
Throw some bags.
My first car was a Crown Victoria. And I drove it through Northern Michigan winters on sketchy all-season Goodyear Eagles.
Ooh, boy.
Never mind actual snow tires. And yeah, that would go through. I mean, when was it? Well, at this point, it was 12 years ago, 13 years ago or so. I was doing a series for Winding Road magazine called Flip This Car. And I bought a 94 Buick Roadmaster sedan for a winter car. It came on all-terrain truck tires. And I literally drove that car. I literally drove that car down an unplowed road to get to work. 2 miles. At some points, I was going through 1.5, 2-foot drifts. I mean, I had speed built up. The only way I got through was literally punching through them. Just a tank. Tank. And then I also drove.
The mileage is only 90,000, essentially 500 miles. Like, it literally seems like the little old lady car. Like, I bought this. It, you know. I got nothing. I can't think of a better car than this. I've got one other pick, but this is the better one.
The only thing that I would say, it's not very interesting.
Isn't it, though?
Good winter car, but it's not very interesting. It's got leather. It's nice inside, but it's not really. I've driven a ton of these cars. Maybe I'm just kind of jaded by them.
I don't know. I think it could still be interesting, but okay.
It could be fun. The V8 with a rear wheel drive with the longer wheelbase. It's like, okay, how long do you want to stay in opposite lock? You can just, you could literally turn the wrong way at every corner, and with a little bit of skill, you can keep it on the road. Now, I'm not saying anybody out there listening to do that. You should drive nice and safe and cautiously and defensively at all times.
Yep. So I want to call out some comments here. Yep. Vampire Bear. Yes, I know Hilliard is a suburb of Columbus because I'm living there right now. So that, trust me, I know exactly where it is. I'm there. Patrick says, my one classmate had a cop car in the same style. He blew the rear end straight out of it. The differential had a hole. How do you do that? I thought, everything I've ever heard said these things are just dead nuts reliable, but you know,
children. Oh, you can do it.
And then you can do it. Green. I've got two Panther platform cars from the sweetest old lady I knew, my mom, 20 years apart. They were great cars.
So, nice.
Yeah.
Well, I am on the lookout, Ramblers, for a 1982 Ford LTD Crown Victoria. I want to stress, in 1982, it was LTD Crown Victoria.
Yes.
That was my first car. And I very, very seldom see them because who the hell wants an 82 LTD Crown Victoria?
Yeah, well, they've returned to the earth.
Most of them have. Okay. But turn. If I find one, it's there. Okay. I've got a lot to choose from, man.
I've only got one more. So let's do two each. So do your second best pick.
I don't know if it's my second best, but this is the one I'm going to go with because it would be super interesting. And I bet it would go through the snow surprisingly well.
Is it Saab?
Is this showing up on the screen? There it is. There it is. That's a 1994. That's a
terrible choice.
That is not a terrible choice. When the roads get really bad, you just stop and take a nap.
Oh, come on.
This is a 1995 Ford. It's a Jayco motorhome. It's a single axle, dual wheel, single axle motorhome. It's built on a big Econoline chassis. It's got everything you need for a winter vehicle. 460 cubic inch engine, runs like a Swiss watch. Transmission is strong and shifts like it should. Boom, right there. That's all you need for a winter beater. That's all you need. The engine runs, the transmission shifts. It means you can go. Odometer shows 35,000 miles.
I guarantee
like you it has never, no, it's no, look at it. It's never rolled over. That's 35,000 original miles. Tires are lowercase r. Tires are new with plenty of tread. It appears previous owners fixed leaks.
It appears? Like that's...
But the maintenance, right? It's got two gas tanks. It sleeps six. It's pretty clean for the year. Got this on trade. Would rather have the cash. Would make a great deer hunting shack or fix it up inside and you would have a great little motor home. $2,000, cash in hand, money talks. This isn't very far from me. Little power wash on the outside. Get rid of some of the scum on there. Yeah. Inside, we see there is a table. There's a sofa.
There is a sofa.
There are cushions laying about. It's a camper. It's got a ladder to get up onto the roof. And with the weight, I bet that would just eliminate snow with extreme prejudice.
I don't know, buddy.
And if the heater,
you know what I will say?
If the van heater doesn't work, just set up a kerosene heater in the back.
I think you, your wife, and Scarlett the cat would have many a happy night in that.
I bet they wouldn't go anywhere near it. They would be like, hell no, get away from me, you creeper.
Yeah.
But is it interesting? I think so. Is it $2,000? Yep. Yeah. Can you drive it through winter?
Okay. I will admit my second choice is not interesting.
I'm concerned now. If the Crown Vic was your first choice.
No, it's just, but I do have nostalgia for this vehicle. I got my driver's license in a vehicle very similar to this, in the snow, by the way. It is a 2000 Jeep Cherokee. According to the seller, it has recent exhaust work, brake work, new battery, nice tires. It's got over 200,000 miles on it. You know, it's the two-tone, it's white over black. The one that we had was all black. I agree it is not the most interesting vehicle, but it is a vehicle I have driven in the snow, and I would feel incredibly comfortable driving this throughout a winter. They are very, very capable vehicles when the snow starts falling. I agree, though, it is not the most interesting choice. I should mention the price. It is $2,000 exactly. You know, it's got that 4-liter inline six, which is pretty, as I recall, we had a few little issues with ours, but nothing terrible. It's got the automatic, you know, it's I know this is not, you know, I wish I had picked, like, I'll be totally honest with you. There was a Jaguar XJ8 Vandenplas for $2,000 that I almost picked, but it wasn't technically, the guy said, like, it needed a ton of work. This one at least runs, you know, and again, it's a vehicle I have nostalgia for because I got my driver's license in, I believe my family's was a 97 Jeep Cherokee. Like, it's something I'm familiar with. It's something I have a little bit of nostalgia for. And I know I've literally driven them in the winter. It'll be fine.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, that even with those tires on, I mean, I have snow tires that I put on the Forester just to make extra sure I'm completely unstoppable in the snow. That on all seasons is going to be amazing. Especially, it looks like it's got some, like a decent all terrain tire. I can't quite make it out there on the side. What is that?
Rodeon.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, Nexian Rodeon ATs.
Well, you know, hey, I mean, four-wheel drive, you can go.
Yeah.
Turning and stopping, we'll see. I can't fault your pick other than I would agree it's not terribly interesting.
We need to wait a moment because my mother is weighing in. Goes in the snow and the Cherokee will haul rocks and trees in a pinch. This is because, and I think we are well past the statute of limitations, my mother and I used to steal rocks from a state park because she wanted them for her garden and we would load them into the truck. So what? Am I a criminal? Yes, technically. But yes, I've done this. This is my crime.
All right, vamp for me just a little bit here, Bruce.
Okay, I'm here for you.
I gotta take us on a little side trip here if I can.
No, wait, I've got another story. So the other thing was there was this man, I believe he was German, who sold trees near to our home. And that is what she is talking about, hauling trees in a pinch, because we went and picked up trees from this guy. And so he had like a skid steer and he was complaining that, you know, the hatch obviously opens upwards like most hatches. It doesn't open, you know, out. And he was complaining because he couldn't haul the tree directly into the back of it. And he got really angry about that for reasons I'm never going to totally understand. But that's another thing that happened. Do you need me to vamp some more? Because I'll keep telling Jeep stories.
No, sadly, I was in a former life. I wrote about driving a 5-liter Mustang convertible through winter.
Okay.
And I actually used it to haul Christmas trees. With the roof down, it was an outstanding vehicle to go get Christmas tree. So you don't necessarily
tip. Every year with your Mustang, don't you dress up as Santa every year and drive around?
I wasn't dressing up as Santa in that one. I was just using the hell out of it.
You. Okay.
I was just using the hell. It's like, okay, it's 40 degrees. It's reasonably warm. There's a Christmas tree farm like 5 miles away. Put the roof down and just stick the tree in the back.
You do dress up as Santa and drive around in your Mustang.
I didn't last year because I was still trying to move into the new house and get acclimated. But prior to that, yes,
you've done it in the past.
Okay. The red 95. Yep. I'll put on, I don't have like a full Santa suit, but I'll get like the hat and I'll get the beard and just drive around with the roof down. This was out in South Dakota, honking and waving to people. And hey,
okay.
I'm spreading cheer and good joy.
I'm not judging you. I think that's a very good thing to do. I just wanted the audience to know I wasn't crazy.
No, I'm the crazy one, apparently. Unfortunately, I was trying to find, because that was an article at Winding Road Magazine that I wrote a long time ago, and I see that series has now been taken down. So I have my photos in archive somewhere that I could reference at some point. Has four... The cheap car challenge. Let me share one more here with you, Bruce. If I can be so bold here, because you were specifically asking about this, and yes, I found one. And yes, I would drive it. It would be wonderfully interesting. Saabs are always interesting. This is a 1990 Saab 900 turbo. Now,
oh, it's a turbo.
I want to be clear.
Because that automatic will die. That automatic will die in days.
I want to be clear. It is a 5-speed. Ooh. It does say it is classified as a parts car. But it meets all the criteria for a winter beater.
Yeah.
Originally purchased as a parts car, ended up selling my other 900. Runs and drives well. Boom. Right there. All you need.
Yeah,
first gear is not accessible. Is there a all linkage right, issue? For some reason, it doesn't go into first gear. So just, hey, ride the clutch a little bit more in second. So you've got engine. You've got a functional transmission. The body is pretty rusty. Would be an ambitious restoration project.
Maybe the underpan is, but
it's body, it's a black
panels look good.
It's a black car. I'm sure there's lots of rust on it that you can't really see. I mean, I could just see some around the fenders right there. All in all, looking around it,
good.
The paint is cooked on it. There are, as you start looking, we're looking at the interior now. I mean, it's got a tan leather interior. The driver's seat's pretty tore up.
Dude, I've seen way worse, and I know you have too.
I know, right? It's like they call it a parts car, but I literally drove a Volkswagen without a floor through a winter.
Yeah, that seat it's cracked and stuff, but that's just 30-year-old leather. Like,
it looks like there are rust stains on the carpet. I'm dying to know what's under there, if there's anything under that carpeting. I mean, when you get close, it looks like, I mean, you could see there's been rust patches done around the fenders. So, I mean, yeah, rusty, the paint is blown off of it.
Yeah, okay.
But for winter car, runs, drives, okay.
I mean, it's sweet. It's going to go through the snow like no other, because that's all Sweden knows. Like, it's going to be fine.
So that was, I was going between that and the other motorhome. I've driven super rusty cars that run kind of sketchy. I would take
that over the motorhome all day, every day.
Yeah, I know. That's why I had to share, because when I found that, and here's the $1,500. And the ironic part, it's for sale in Whitmore Lake. I used to live in Whitmore Lake, and I'm pretty sure I know exactly where this car is, because I think I recognize some of the houses behind it.
Okay. That's a good pick. That's a really good pick. You're right.
It's 900 not
perfect,
turbo,
but it's a perfect winter car, because hell, you drive it for 4 months. You know, you drive it November to March, April, you know.
Yep. You and wheel then, it out, you buff it up, you advertise it just as graduations are happening. And hey, you want to get your kids just a cheap little graduation car? Boom, here you go.
Exactly.
Disclosing obviously everything that's wrong with it, because I wouldn't suggest panning bad cars onto young drivers. No.
No, that would be wrong. But yeah,
Group FBCs, don't encourage me, man. This needs saving. It must be saved. Patrick Stark, yes, my favorite. Do not enable me. I've already got one parts car that doesn't run. It doesn't even roll. Bruce, yours. At least your cheap car, your 300, at least yours moves. Mine is literally up on jack stands because all four wheels are frozen up.
Ew. Really? That's a bummer. I didn't know that.
Well, I'm fairly certain it's just the brakes that are frozen up. I can move a couple of the rear wheels if I put a lot of force in there. Dude, the car sat outside for 4 years. I mean, the brakes are froze up.
You think it's brakes and not the bearings?
Yes. It could be both for all. It's probably just the brakes. I'm ready to just replace everything if I need to.
So we're finishing up here, but real quick, Patrick Stark, I love a Subaru brat. Yeah, I do too, but find one that's still in decent shape. They're kind of have all returned to the earth. They've all
gone to the rust graveyard.
Exactly. Real quick, I want to say I got to check my calendar. It might be 3 weeks now that I mention it.
And in November.
November 29th, we will have a guest on the show. So I want you guys to keep that in mind. His name is Carl Pulley. He runs the Honda Museum Collection in Torrance, California, that they just opened. There's been a Honda Museum Collection at the Suzuka Circuit in Japan for years and years now, but now they have one in California as well, and he is one of the folks managing that, and so he is going to be on the show. We have him confirmed for at least half an hour, and I'm going to try to, you know, I'm going to try to get him on longer than that, but we'll at least get half an hour with him to talk about the collection that they have there. So looking forward
super
to
excited
that.
For again, that.
Yep, that'll be November 29th. But otherwise, again, please, you know, feel free to email us podcast@motorone.com. Any suggestions you have for the show. Again, like I said, anything you really, really like that we do, anything you really, really hate that we do, anything you think we should do, like, just let us know. Yeah, not a problem. And with that, I think we're going to call it a night. As always, we really appreciate that you decided to spend time with us. We love our commenters. We love the fact that we get to have fun with you guys every week. It's a highlight of my week. And yeah, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. Thank you for spending time with us. And it's always super appreciated. So bye-bye.
We'll see you, buddy. Bye-bye.